General Kenobi! You are the bold one.
Hello there.
Welcome to episode 7 of Hello There, Star Wars Podcast, your weekly show for all things Star Wars. My name is Anthony Palm. With me, as always, my good friend Nate Hicks, back with us. Sorry we took kind of a half of a week off. I actually thought that I had posted my spoiler-free thoughts on Solo earlier in the week. Turns out it only posted to anchor.fm, not to iTunes and all that. So that went live Thursday. Sorry about that, not going out earlier. But this week we're going to have an action-packed show for you about an action-packed movie called Solo, A Star Wars Story. That's going to be pretty much everything we're talking about this week. We don't even have a holocron ready, so maybe we'll think of one on the spot. But no segments this week. We're just going to be talking heavy spoilers about Solo. So if you have not seen the movie and do not want to know what happens, please turn this off. It'll be here when you're ready. But yeah, so let's get into it. Okay, well, I'm just going to jump right into the spoiler of all spoilers. When it got towards the end of the movie, you know, there's the final fight scene with Dryden Vos and Han and Kira, and then Han leaves. I saw a Mandalorian, like a set of Mandalorian armor in the background. I was like, that's weird. I was like, I don't know if that's, like, I was thinking in my brain, like, I don't know if that's actually a shout out to Boba Fett. What's that doing there? And then I was thinking, and then Beckett was like, hey, I know some hot shot, some big shot gangster on Tatooine. And I was like, well, then who does Dryden Vos work for if it's not Jabba? And then Kira, turns the projector on, and I see robot legs and a hood. I'm like, okay, it's not the Emperor. I hear Sam Witwer's voice. Actually, I heard Sam Witwer's voice first, I think. I don't remember the exact sequence. I got to see it again. But I heard Sam Witwer's voice. I was like, wait a minute. And my jaw started to just slowly fall to the floor. And my hands covered my face, and my friends were with me, and they looked over to me, and they were just laughing at me. And I literally out loud in the movie theater went, holy. And I went, no way. They're bringing Darth Maul to the cinematic universe, to the movies, like, back. I couldn't believe it, dude.
The whole
next scene happened with Beckett and Han, and I was still floored from the Maul reveal. How did you react to it? What did you think? I'm still freaking out about it.
So my reaction was basically yours. So you can see this, but for the people listening, you can't. We're watching the movie, and I already had my hand on my wife's like leg. Like, I was just, you know, my hand was just resting there, whatever. And she turns on the holoprojector. And kind of the same with you. I was like, okay, it's a hooded figure. It's like, okay, robot legs. It was about the time when the robot legs kind of like did that, like that. Like gas pressure release motion, I guess it was. And I'm like, I start going like this. I'm like, like I audibly like gasped. It was like tapping her leg, and she was like, what? And I was like, look. And like I pointed at the screen, and then like he pops his head, and I'm like, my reaction and yours were basically about the same.
And it was Sam Witwer's voice that made me go into a frenzy. I was like, holy shit. Sick. And okay, finish your thought, and then I got a little anecdote.
Well, what I love, like, after noticing, like, I was sitting there watching it when he took his hood off, and, well, for one, the lightsaber was cool. I feel like the lightsaber was a little too much, but I can see them being like, hey, some people may not nowadays know who this character is, like, if it's just a mainstream audience.
So yeah, so they're like, hey, let's reaffirm it's the guy with the double-bladed lightsaber.
Yeah. But
I didn't care. People are like, whoa, why did he have to do that? So, yeah. You know, like, who cares? Like, it was cool. It was cool to see that it was his lightsaber from Clone Wars. That was the cool part.
Yep. One of my favorite things that I noted, or one of the first things that I noticed was, I'm like, God, that looks like Ray Park, but that sounds like Sam Witwer. And then I texted you like after I got out, I was like, was that? And then you said, you confirmed, yeah, it was.
It's Ray Park awesome. doing the acting and saying we were doing the voice. So here's my quick little anecdote. And Tay actually reminded me of it. I didn't even realize it. I met Sam Witwer a while ago at this point. I think it was like 4 years ago, maybe. It was right when Clone Wars ended, like right after it ended. Or it was announced it was canceled. I don't remember if it was before the the lost episodes or whatever. I don't remember if it was before those launched. But anyways, it was after they announced they canceled it. And I asked Sam. I was like, dude. Actually, it was after they announced Rebels. So I don't remember when that fell regarding like the lost episodes, whatever. But it was after they announced Rebels. And I go to Sam because I met him. Like they did like a meet and greet type thing. I'm like, dude. I didn't say dude. I was too scared. but I was like, listen. Like, they got to get you in a movie. I was like, you've done so much for Lucasfilm and the Star Wars, like, animated stuff and the video games. Like, you got to get into a movie. And she was like, and Tay was like, it's so weird that when we met him, you were like, when are you going to be in a movie? And now he's finally in a live-action Star Wars movie. And it was so awesome. And part of me is like, yeah, it would have been cool if they got Peter Serafinowicz back for the voice. But A, he's on record that he can't stand the prequels. So, whatever. I don't want someone that doesn't want to be there. And B, Sam is Darth Maul now. You know what I mean? Yeah. He's been Darth Maul for more than Peter Serafinowicz ever was in one episode of the Clone Wars. And quick correction. I don't know if it was Maul's lightsaber from Clone Wars. He definitely had it in Rebels. I don't remember if that's the same one he had at the end of Clone Wars, though.
Half circle on it?
Yeah, I don't remember if he had that in Clone Wars. Okay. I remember initially he had like just a basic looking like half lightsaber.
Yeah, I think it was just his lightsaber from Phantom Menace that he had that it was just a half. And then you are right. I think he, towards the end, like in the lost episodes, I think he did have a double-bladed. I just can't remember what it looked like. And obviously,
well,
I haven't got to that.
That's
part.
Definitely the one he had in Rebels. So I just don't know if he had it in Clone Wars. I just wanted to correct that. Okay. But yeah, I'm so happy for Sam and Ray Park, because Ray Park has been wanting to do some Star Wars stuff for a long time, too. So, and he seems like a good dude, and he seems like he loves it. So it's awesome that both of them get to be part of it.
Yeah, agreed.
And we can talk more about like the actual ramifications for Maul being back, but let's get into the actual movie itself, because we've literally this is the solo review episode, and we've only talked about Maul. there's no Darth anymore; he's credited as only Maul. So gotta make sure you be clear on that one. But yeah, so what did you think of the movie as a whole? Just like a real quick thoughts. And then, what are your thoughts on Alden being Han?
So, for one, as far as the movie goes, Alden, I really had no problem with whatsoever. It didn't take me out of the movie. I believed it every step of the way. Probably even more so in the beginning, when you first see Han, It convinced me. I wasn't one of those, oh man, it kind of took me out of the movie. Like, that's not Han Solo. And I don't agree with that at all.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more with you. It took me like a minute, you know, I need to get into the mindset of this isn't an actor playing Han Solo. I just need to let it happen. But it happened in the first, you know, when it really set in for me is when he had he got dragged in front of Lady Proxima, which, by the way, I thought was an awesome looking creature.
Yeah,
I thought Lady Proxima was awesome, and Moloch was whatever. He kind of looked like, I don't know. He kind of looked like those the enforcers from Doctor Who when the school gets sucked onto the moon. But that scene where like he's getting hit and then he like grabs I don't remember what it was. I don't think it was a blaster. I think it was like a stick or something, and he yells. I'm gonna quote it wrong, but he said something along the line of the next person that hits me is getting hit back or something like that, or like he was getting kind of like sick of their crap. And then when he tried to trick them with the rock as a thermal detonator, and then he made the noise as it. And I was like, that is totally something that like a 20-year-old Han would do.
A little fun side note for you guys listening, whenever they at the very beginning they're talking about Lady Proxima. I was sitting there thinking in the movie theater, and then for the rest of that night, I was like, God, Proxima Midnight. Okay, who is that in Star Wars? And then I finally looked it up at whenever I was at work the next day, and I was like, damn it, it's the elf-looking chick from Infinity War.
Well, you might have also been thinking of Proxy from Force Unleashed.
No. I know Proxima Midnight was like for sure what I was thinking. I remember Proxy. I won't forget Proxy. But yeah, no, I was just like, well, that's the completely wrong universe. But yeah, no.
Well, there
I
was
that.
There was a nod to what's that PS1 Star Wars game that you really like that I never played?
It's not that I really like. I played it. And I tried to trick
you
with it.
Yeah, that's what I meant.
Terakasi or Terakasoff. Yeah, she makes that. She makes that.
I think it's Terakasi or something like that. Yeah. There is a reference to that. I thought of you when I heard that. I was like, oh, yeah, that's the game that Nate tried to trick me with on We Do Video Game 20 Questions on my other podcast, and he tried to trick me with that.
At the time, it was a fun Star Wars PS1 fighting
game. Right, I mean, for how good a Star Wars PS1 game could be.
Yeah.
I bought Alden as Han pretty quickly. And I don't know. What did you think of the whole, like, you know, there's something that stood out to me when him and Kira were trying to when they were trying to escape. And you heard like one of those like join the Empire kind of like propaganda like commercials. And the Imperial March was part of it. Like it was like in universe like source music. Uh-huh. It was kind of weird to me. Did you notice that?
Yeah, I actually kind of have. It's not necessarily a complaint, but something I got to thinking about today. I was kind of surprised on the way the Empire was in the movie. I was kind of hoping that it would be more apparent in the atmosphere of how menacing the Empire was, because that's at the height of their control when Solo was going on. But I got to thinking about it, and I'm like, well, as far as tonally, it would make sense that in this world, everyone's used to it at this point. So you would see Empire recruitment centers, you know, for people to sign up to be stormtroopers or pilots. And it's not, and it doesn't give you the same tone that it does in Rogue One of, hey, these people are absolute villains. They're building this death machine. It's kind of more of like, hey, here's this totalitarian government that's kind of in control of everything. We kind of got to deal with it. So after more consideration, that made sense. But it's something I thought about when I got out. I was like, I was expecting the Empire to be a little bit more prominent.
It was weird. They didn't exactly humanize them, but it was kind of
I know what you're talking about.
They normalized them, you know. Yep. And I think that was kind of what Ron Howard was trying to get at, like a couple months ago when he was talking about the movie, and he was saying like we've never seen a movie like this in the sense that like the Empire just rules everything. And I guess that's probably what he meant, is that it just kind of normalized the Empire.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I didn't mind that. It was specifically hearing the Imperial March in universe. That was kind of weird to me.
Yeah. Kind of just before we get down into the nitty gritty, my overall opinion of the whole movie is I really enjoyed it. I absolutely don't see the amount of vitriol I'm seeing about the movie, and we could talk about that a little bit more. I can see people's actual complaints about things in the movie. I don't think it's a cash grab. I've heard some people say that this movie didn't have any heart, and although in some capacities I can see that, I disagree. Now, the only thing I will say as far as Solo goes is this movie did not feel like a main universe Star Wars movie to me. I would lump in Rogue One with the rest of the saga, A, because it ties in directly, but it also has the same feel. And that in itself could be explained with who directed it, because almost universally between the different directors, especially the newer movies, they still kind of had that Star Wars tone as far as the cinematography goes.
Right, yeah. Gareth Edwards definitely had that with Rogue One. And then Tony Gilroy, even though he came in to quote-unquote fix it, according to him, I feel like he mostly was just dealing with what was already done. Whereas Ron Howard, it sounds like he reshot the majority of this movie. Because I don't think Lord Miller got a writing credit for this, right? Or a filming credit? Or
I don't think so. The best comparison I can give to Solo kind of felt a little more like something like a Clone Wars to me than a main Star Wars movie.
I definitely got that vibe. It definitely felt kind of almost it felt like Dave Filoni had his kind of hands on this. I don't know if he did. I should have checked the credits. Like next time I'll check the credits. But it definitely felt like a Dave Filoni kind of touch to it.
Kind of the tone of it. Everything mattered in the movie, but it also felt like it mattered in the sense of Clone Wars. Like, this stuff happened, but it doesn't have the same weight as the saga movies. That's kind of the kind of vibe I got from the movie.
Right, yeah. The only thing that really tied into the larger universe was Maul at the end. And even that is still so deeply rooted in the Clone Wars as well. Yeah, so I definitely got that vibe. I actually kind of preferred it that way. And so,
It doesn't have to be main saga. We can have movies that are like this.
Well, I'm glad it didn't, because if Han ended up running into Uncle Owen or something, you know what I mean? It would have been weird.
Yeah.
So I mean, it was nice that. They were definitely referencing him the whole time.
But if he would have ran, like, nothing.
He never actually showed. Boba Fett never actually showed up.
Yeah.
Jabba the Hutt never showed up. Greedo, I would have been okay with a little Greedo cameo, but I'm okay that he didn't. Having like the cameo of Ponda Baba and Dr. Evazan from Rogue One, and it was so in your face, like, all right, we get it. Like, you didn't need that.
Nothing about this felt in your face to me, except Beckett's disguise. I didn't really, I guess, unless
that was a little weird.
Yeah, that one very much felt like an Easter egg. Like, that didn't feel like a common thing every slaver would wear.
But it was like a ham-fisted Easter egg.
Yeah. That was the only thing that I will say throughout the movie felt in your face. Like, hey, look at this reference.
But, you know what, though? I think it works better that it was Beckett. If it was Lando, I really don't think I would have liked it. Beckett wearing the disguise, I think that it... Because then if it's Lando wearing it, then it's like, all right, we see Lando wear that two of the probably only two times he ever wear. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Speaking of Beckett, I wrote a little note down. See if you agree with this. I kind of feel like Beckett was the only person in this movie that knew what was going on at all times, at least the way that Woody Harrelson portrayed. Like, it seemed a lot like he'd be like, Han, I'm telling you. It's like, don't trust. And it's like, see, told you not to trust. Like, the way he played the way his performance portrayed to me, it felt like he knew what was going to happen in almost every part of the movie.
Yeah, I could see that. I think it's more just that he just didn't trust anyone in general, so that just kind of led to him being right about Kira.
Yeah.
What did you think of... All right, so we're kind of skipping all over the place and kind of skipping mostly to the end of the movie. Let's jump back. Let's talk about Corellia for a second. Because I thought Corellia was so cool looking. Like, it just had such a cool look to it. Mm-hmm. It felt like... And I said this in my spoiler-free impressions, but I said it felt almost like that industrial district on Coruscant where Count Dooku lands at the end of Attack of the Clones and meets up with Darth Sidious. It felt kind of like that, but even dirtier and grimier. And just seeing all the cranes and the ships lugging around, like, the bridge parts of Star Destroyers and stuff, I just thought it looked so cool. I thought ILM did such a phenomenal, phenomenal job with the visuals on Corellia.
Now, I was at a slight disadvantage. I think my theater's projector was a little dim because all the Corellia scenes, like, were really, really dark. Really
they
dark.
Were definitely dark, but I didn't think they were too dark, though.
Well,
so
for me, it kind of was. Like, it was like, oh, this is, like, kind of hard to see dark, but I stuck through it. I totally agree with that. I actually kind of have a thought about that. I feel like throughout the entire movie, the first act, and by first act, I'm talking about from the start of the movie till the end of the train heist, that portion of the movie felt the most like Star Wars. Outside of what I said about it having a clone.
Okay.
Like something about that first act was just super tight, super... I could see this being in a main Star Wars movie. And then the rest kind of felt more Clone Wars-y to me. But...
Well, I really appreciate that they just kind of dropped you into Han stealing the thing.
Too.
And then... Like it just drops you in and he's kind of like, you know, freaking out, running around.
Yeah.
Did we see... I don't think we saw the scene in the trailer where he walks up to, like, the grate, like, as if he's walking up to, like, a speakeasy. I don't think that was actually in the movie.
When him and Kira are trying to get away?
Just the one from the trailer. Where he walks up, it's like a grated kind of door. And he knocks...
I
don't know if he knocks
either.
On it or he looks through... You see him through, like, looking through the holes and then it opens up. I don't think that was in the movie. Because I thought that was going to be the end of the movie when he meets up with... When he, you know... finally wins the Falcon from Lando, but then he won it on some weird like Jurassic Park planet.
Yeah. So let me ask you about Lando. How'd you feel about Lando?
I thought he did good. I thought Donald Glover did very, very good. I liked him a lot, actually. Don't let me, you know, I'll be honest, I really liked him. But I think that
it was overhyped.
People say, not even that he was overhyped, but people saying he steals the show, I think is a disservice to Alden in this movie. I think Alden did good. I think there was a perfect amount of Lando. I think if there was any more Lando, it would have been too much. I think he was just the right amount in it. And I thought the scene where he left in the Falcon after that was the perfect scene for both Han and Lando. Like that's exactly what I pictured both of them doing in that sequence. Like Han saying, "Yeah, we got like a bunch of a bunch of soldiers in that ship, and all I gotta do is snap my fingers and they'll be over here." And then Lando just leaves.
Yeah. I think honestly I probably preferred Alden's performance throughout the movie than Donald Glover's, which I was genuinely surprised by, because I love Donald Glover. I love almost everything he does. But I think for me, his performance of stealing the show in I Want a Lando Movie was really kind of overhyped. And the main takeaway out of that comment that I got from this movie is the one thing that I would love to see a Lando movie about would just be is mainly because of L3.
I want to see him and L3 together, like before Solo starts.
Yeah.
And you can maybe have him with, like, maybe not Bossk, but, like, I don't know, you can have him with some other legacy characters.
Yeah. Now, I keep jumping ahead, too, just because I'm eager to talk about this stuff. I loved Han and Chewie's interaction, like when they first met. I loved that
scene. I thought it was brilliant, and I love the way that they set it up, where it's like, I knew it wasn't a Rancor, but I knew they were like paying homage to Jedi, to Return of the Jedi. You gotta specify now, because it's two Jedi movies. But I love that it was an homage to the Rancor pit, and I knew it was gonna be Chewie, but I was still smiling the whole time leading up to it being Chewie. That was so good. And then Han actually speaking, I can't remember the name of the language. What's the name of the Wookiee language? It's got a name, I just can't remember it.
Yeah, even leading up to that, while you looked that up, one thing I loved was the interactions on the battlefield. Whenever Beckett had stolen that uniform, and he was like, who's the ranking officer? And they're like, you are. And he was like, oh, okay. And like the first time you meet him, and that whole interaction with Han, like, hey, I know something's up, I want to be a part of it. Like, I bought all that, and I thought that was really well done.
Oh, it's a Shriwook. Shriwook is the name of the language. I thought it was brilliant, and like it shows like that's how Han, like there's the scene in Force Awakens, where Finn is like, you can understand that thing, and he's like, yeah, and that thing could understand you too, and it's like Han is speaking for Chewie because Chewie can't speak basic, but he's like, yeah, like Chewie's my boy, like I understand him just fine. Yeah. So I love that it kind of... I kind of wonder why Han knows how to speak Shriwook, but it's cool that they at least acknowledge, like, he understands him.
Yeah. And then shout out to Rio. I really liked Rio.
He was the Rocket Raccoon of this movie.
Yeah. Do you recognize who that was, right?
Jon Favreau.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It took me a second, because whenever he was talking through the helmet, the camera kept pointing to him. I'm like, he's somebody important. Like, they wouldn't keep going to that random character. Yeah. And then the scene when he discovers that he's not an actual stormtrooper, when that
he's like, one of your arms just slipped out.
Yeah, but I thought his timing in the movie was good. Like, it sucked to see him go, because I really did like him, but he didn't overstay his welcome, so that was good.
Val kind of, let's talk about Thandie Newton's Val for a second, because I thought that I liked her for how long she was in it, and then they just killed her off. Like, I wonder if in the original cut she was in it more. Because I feel like I can understand Rio, kind of getting axed kind of quick, because it's like, you got to propel the movie forward, and he was a cool character to have around for a little bit, but then you got to kind of focus on Han and Chewie, really. But Val, I was like, they didn't really go anywhere with Val dying. He was just kind of like, they acknowledged it like a scene afterwards, but then they don't really bring it up again. And Beckett doesn't even really seem that upset about it, honestly. So I kind of wish that she was around for more of the movie, because I loved her character, but she got axed real quick.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I think you're right, because, I mean, she was on a lot of promotional material. Like, she wasn't as much as the rest of the cast.
Yeah, and L3, too, we'll get to L3 in a minute, but L3, too, was like, both of them were promoted as, like, big characters in this movie, and then they both didn't really last that long.
Yeah.
We were right about the L3 thing with the Falcon. We both were like, when C-3PO says, like, your ship's
speaking as peculiar dialect or something like
that. It's something like that, we're paraphrasing, but and like when Han's like, I gotta talk to the Falcon, And we were like, wait a minute. Because we knew L3 is not around later. So we were right about that.
Now, okay, going into L3, I feel like it's unfair that we both have listened to/read Last Shot, because I don't think either of us are going to be able to take L3's performance as is, like everybody else in the mainstream has. So, like, for example, someone shared a picture of L3 and was like, worse than Jar Jar. Which, of course, I don't agree with, because I know a little bit more.
Yeah, that doesn't make any sense.
I know a little more about that character. But even Chelsea, my wife, I asked her what she thought about her. And she was like, I mean, I thought she was kind of whiny. Like, I didn't really care for the, you know, fight for robot rights. Like, I thought, like, she thought it was a little too much. But me and you both know, like, there's a deeper character, more of a deep character to her than fight for robot rights. You know, there's a connection between her and Lando, and I feel like the mainstream is not going to know that and is really only going to see the parts.
That's the kind of issue I had with L3 not being in it for that long. Which, I mean, it kind of is what it is, because you need to put L3's brains into the Falcon to make the Kessel Run jump.
Yeah.
But you don't meet Lando in the beginning of the movie. You meet Lando in, like, the second act, so it's kind of like, it makes sense that she wasn't around for that long. It's just a bummer that there wasn't any way to really keep her around longer. But,
Now, question for you. I think I now see why they went out and Disney came out and said that Lando is pansexual, because throughout that movie, they get reference that they get it on.
We were unfortunately correct about that prediction too.
Yeah.
Because we were starting to go along the lines of that last week or 2 weeks ago. We're like, what if Lando likes droids? And we were apparently right. So that's weird.
And that line was pretty funny when she was like, how does that work? And she's just like,
yeah, it's so we're not gonna get into the anatomy of that, but we were on the money with that one ahead of the movie's release as well, unfortunately, because I knew that. I was like, why would they randomly say Lando is pansexual? Like, I was like, what? Like, does he hit on a guy? Does he hit on like a alien? And then we were like, oh no.
I was actually surprised at how wrong. I'm very happy and surprised about how much we were wrong about we had our speculation.
Yeah, because remember, I thought that Dryden Voss was working for Jabba. Obviously, I was wrong about that.
Yeah.
I'm happy I was wrong about that, because who he was actually working for was even more awesome.
Yeah.
I was wrong about, well, kind of half wrong about the whole, like, Han joining the Empire. I guess he did.
But
he only did it because he couldn't get back to Kira. Whereas I thought that he of free will walked up to the, you know, the Imperial, like, recruitment center and joined because he's like, I want to join the army to be a pilot. But it was actually a matter of, you know, it was out of desperation versus, like, him, like, genuinely wanting to do it.
Well, let's talk about Kira for a second, because my take on Kira is, I think that Emilia Clarke, and I think you mentioned this a little bit, I think Emilia Clarke did very well with what she was given. But I feel like the character itself could have been given more depth to it. Like, in the scenes when her and Han meet back up on Dryden Voss's ship, I gathered by her performance, like, that something bad had happened. Like, the way she, like, I bought...
She's seen some stuff, like, for lack of a better word.
Yeah.
I get the feeling some of her scenes were cut in the reshoots.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of get that feeling. Because I agree, where it's like, she doesn't really show any anger towards Han for leaving her. She actually ends, I think she says, I'm fine with it, or something along the lines of, like, they would have killed both of us or something.
So I think after the shit she saw,
she worded it
fine.
Like, she was glad that at least Han had gotten away.
Yeah.
I do like the fact that instead of just going, like, directly to the Casino Royale ending, where she just betrays him because she's triple-crossing whoever, it was more like, oh, crap, Maul is no one to mess with, so I'm kind of in too deep right now, so sorry, Han, I gotta leave you. I'm glad it was more of that than just straight up her using Han and double-crossing him.
Yeah, which technically we were wrong about, in a sense. Like, she did double-cross, but she knew that she didn't want to
put it was because
Han...
she was in too deep more than it was just she was being malicious.
Yeah, yeah. And Dryden Voss, I love Paul Bettany. I bought Paul Bettany's performance 100%.
Oh, he looked like he was having a lot of fun with that role. He looked like he had a real lot of fun. It looks like he came in for like 2 or 3 days worth of shooting, if that. And he's like, you know what? Let's own this.
Yeah.
But you can't tell, and I mentioned this also in my spoiler-free review, you can mention Dryden Voss was originally performed by Michael K. Williams, and it was supposed to be a CGI character, and he was supposed to resemble like a lion. So if you see like his bodyguards, Dryden Voss's bodyguards, you can see kind of what they would have went for if they had more time, but because of the reshoots, they wouldn't have had time to do the animation for Dryden Voss as a CGI character. That's why they kind of converted him into Paul Bettany's character as, you know, a human with like the markings or scars or whatever they were.
Yeah. What did you say his name was again, the original?
I think it was Michael K. Williams. Michael I think.
K. Yeah, I mean, you can see that in the guards. Like, I did think that was a little weird at first. I was like, why are they?
That's because that, right, exactly. That they were going for a look like that for Dryden Voss originally, and they probably had already done the guards, and they just were like, all right, well, Dryden himself is going to be human.
Is he the dude from The Wire?
I believe so.
Black is a black guy?
Yes.
Okay, yeah, I think I
know. He is African-American.
Yes. Well, okay. But my favorite scene that Paul Bettany did was I love the last heist. Like the
side
one
note,
pulled,
yes, Omar from The Wire.
Okay. The heist they pulled on Dryden. Whenever they were like, wait, so this is the actual real stuff? So who's got the... And like that kind of switcheroo I liked. But I liked his performance of, oh yeah, this is nice. Yeah, I totally would have bought if this was real. Like, the way his performance was.
Yeah, like, he's like he knew that Han was trying to double-cross him. He just didn't realize that it was a double-cross.
Yeah. Yeah, that was a great scene. That was a really
great
scene.
Like it looked so real that I would believe it was the real thing if I didn't know you were betraying me. But Joke's on you, it was the real thing because I was betraying you twice.
Yeah.
The Beckett last second like turning on Han thing did not surprise me at all. I don't know how I feel about it, honestly, because it's so like it's such a Woody Harrelson character thing to do, you know. So it doesn't upset me, but I wasn't surprised by it.
And I'm a little surprised that I really didn't think about this, but unfortunately I didn't see Beckett's character as someone in Star Wars. I just saw it as Woody Harrelson. Which isn't a bad thing, because I love Woody Harrelson.
Nah, see, I bought him as a character in Star Wars.
I don't think I bought him towards the end. I bought him at the beginning for sure. I think towards the end.
Yeah, towards the end, it was kind of like just Woody. Like it could have been Haymitch from Hunger Games.
Yeah, yeah, very much so.
But I was fine with it, though, and I like the fact that Han... I'm glad they didn't just make Han be like the dummy that fell for the double cross. He was like, nah, right. I knew you were going to double cross me. Like, I'm glad that they portrayed Han as like... that kind of scrappy, like, I am thinking two steps ahead, even if it looks like I'm a dopey kind of guy, I'm not. I'm glad that they portrayed him that way. Instead of him actually getting tricked, I feel like that wouldn't have felt like Han Solo to me. So I'm glad that he thought ahead, did all the extra stuff to trick everyone. Because I don't even know if Kira knew about giving Dryden the real stuff, but acting like it's the fake stuff.
I don't think she did.
I'm glad that Han shot first. Yeah. Which is it's so on the nose, but it works so well because even Beckett was like, I would have killed you.
So talk to me about Memphis Nest, because you had brought it up on your react.
So Memphis Nest. What did I say that I couldn't talk about her because it was too spoilery?
You said that you were waiting to talk about it.
Because I couldn't talk about it because it would have been a spoiler to say that it's actually like some 18-year-old girl with a helmet. I knew that it was going to be a woman portraying Emphas Nest. I thought it was originally going to be Kira in disguise, but before the movie came out, and then when I saw them in like the same scenes as each other, I was like, all right, it's not clearly not Kira. But yeah, I mean, I'm fine with the character. It was okay. That she felt very much like a Filoni-verse character. Like that, like Emphas Nest is totally like I could see Emphas Nest like fighting alongside Steela Guerrera, you know?
Yeah. That scene though, when she's doing the monologue about the mercenaries, was really powerful. Like when they would cut to the shots of the people that were around them. Like
and
I
they
bought
did, like,
that.
They cut all their tongues out.
Yeah. I bought that a lot. I thought that was really good.
It did come across a little on the nose, like kind of like a political message thing. But it doesn't bother me. I find it weird. I do almost feel like it's it's one, and I'm nitpicking here, so don't think that I have a huge issue with it, like, oh my god, they ruined it. But it did stand out a little bit, where it's like, are they trying to say Han started the rebellion?
Rebellion, yeah.
Like, the rebellion, or just a rebellion? Because if it's just Emphis Nest's little kind of splinter group, fine. If you're trying to tell me Han Solo himself, like, helped fund the rebellion, like Mon Mothma, Bail Organa, eventually Leia Organa Solo, like, that's a little too, like, universe is too small kind of thing for me. So I'm going to interpret it as it's just Emphis Nest kind of had her own little rebel cell, like Saw Gerrera kind of had, only she clearly wasn't as crazy as Saw Gerrera.
I liked that character. I noticed that character from Saw's.
Two tubes?
Group. Yeah.
So there's two tubes twins. So I don't know if that actually was one of them, or if it's just the same, like, creature, alien, whatever. Online people are saying it is one of the two tubes twins. I don't know if it actually is them. That would be kind of cool if maybe Emphis Nest meets up with Saw Gerrera eventually.
Yeah.
That would be kind of cool. Maybe we'll see that in, like, maybe Resistance or something like that. Oh, no, because it would have taken place before A New Hope. Saw dies in Rogue One. So, yeah. But that would be cool. Maybe, like, a novel. Emphas Nest teaming up with Saw Gerrera might be kind of cool. Or a comic. Yeah. That, I think it would probably fit a comic better. But
he went full, like, militant. Like,
right, like exactly in between Clone Wars and Rogue One.
Yeah.
Is about where this is. So, yeah. That'd be kind of cool. But I loved that... oh, my God. What's his name? I can't remember his name. Oh, my God. I know it. I see his face and everything. Warwick Davis. Warwick Davis finally got, like, a cameo as himself. Like, he got a character that looks like Warwick Davis. He's not in a costume playing an Ewok or something like that.
Well, to be fair, he did have that pretty good one in Phantom Menace when he was at the pod race.
Oh, right.
This was more... This was a speaking role. But, I mean, that one, that is a clear shot of, oh, hey, that's Warwick Davis.
He's playing someone
of importance.
Well, now, how do I word this? Because I want to be careful that I'm not, you know, being offensive. But he's playing someone of his own age and kind of stature. He's not playing he's not playing a little kid or a little creature. He's just playing just a character that happens to be the size that he is. I really like him. I appreciated that Warwick Davis, like, he's been with this franchise since 83. I think even earlier than Jedi. I think he might have had a small cameo in Empire. Don't quote me if I'm wrong. I'm probably wrong on that. But, I mean, obviously he was an Ewok in Jedi. And so it was just cool that it was Warwick Davis. He wasn't playing, like, a little kid or a small size alien. It was just Warwick Davis. I thought that was kind of cool.
So I'm personally not going to go into the whole Kessel, because, I mean, that you can talk about that, those scenes pretty non-spoilery. I mean, apart from the fact of them plugging L3 into the Falcon, you know, which was a great scene.
Which they were already in the... So is that kind of like wind tunnel, the Maw, or was the Maw outside of that? I don't remember. It was kind of confusing the way they worded it.
I think the Maw... I don't know. I really don't know, because I could see the Maw being... I think the Maw is the thing in its entirety. But, like that would make sense. That would be the Maw that they went through to do the Kessel Run. But, like, they just had cut out tunnels for safe passage through it. What was I going to say? The Kessel scenes I really enjoyed. I liked whenever L3 was like took off the restraining bolt and the droid was like, "What do I do?" And they're like, "I don't know, free your brothers, I don't know." And then, like,
she's like, "I don't know, start a rebellion or start a revolution or something like that."
And then she's like, "I started a revolution." And that's the main thing I didn't like about the movie, was how short L3's stuff was. Like, it was a really short time between the first time we saw her and when she's plugged into the Falcon, which makes sense.
It was a little weird, the amount of emphasis on her crotch. It was just weird. That felt very Lord and Miller to me. That did not feel like a Ron Howard thing. It's not disgusting to me or anything. It was just weird.
The crotch isn't what I noticed, but I did notice that even though she was a robot, she had hips.
Well, because if you go back to last shot, L3 was just, like, built from all kinds of random droid parts, right?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, she was. She's not an astromech, but a lot of her parts are from an astromech.
Right, exactly. I vividly remember them describing that, her as, like, put together from astromech parts in last shot. So it's very interesting the way that she's kind of like the way her like bodily composition, I don't know how else you really word it, but like the way that L3's kind of character was designed is very cool looking.
So I had a thought today, because I don't think you can argue that Rian Johnson, and I know he wasn't in charge of cinematography, I know someone else, but I think that Rian Johnson and The Last Jedi is the best cinematography in the saga, in my personal opinion. It's my favorite. I think it's the most beautiful.
Out of all 9 movies, including Rogue One and Solo?
Yeah, Rogue One, I really enjoyed Rogue One cinematography, so I would probably, those are pretty close. But going back to my earlier comment about how, as far as directing and cinematography, how I felt like Solo didn't really fall into the rest of the movies, do you think you would enjoy like a Rian Johnson directed Solo movie? Like this movie, but in the style of Rian Johnson.
That might be a loaded question to some people, depending on who you ask. That's a loaded question. Take one of the movies everyone hates with another movie everyone hates.
Yeah,
reason.
Editing,
but
cinematography,
I feel.
Pure look. By the look of it, by the kind of grittiness.
I would actually almost say maybe Gareth Edwards doing a solo movie. Take Rogue One, because as much as I love The Last Jedi, and as good as I think the visuals are, I feel like it almost was oversaturated. It's like there's a lot of like a real lot of reds.
I could take that.
And like a real lot of like this. It's just very. And I'm not. Again, I am nitpicking. So don't get mad at me. I love Last Jedi, but I do feel like it's a little oversaturated. And I feel like in the time period that we would be seeing a young Solo, it would have to be kind of drab and miserable and kind of maybe not gray, but you know, kind of used looking. So I would say Gareth Edwards. I would even say maybe like, I mean, it never happened. I would love to get George Lucas back, maybe not directing, but writing a solo movie.
Yeah,
and producing it. It really breaks my heart because George Lucas gets so much crap from so many people, and this is George's universe, you know.
Yeah,
I'm not about to get into this. Maybe this is another episode where I talk about George Lucas, but it does bum me out.
I do want to talk about. But you know, before we get done with this episode, I do want to talk about the vitriol and the hate that Solo is getting right now. And I texted you, I think that it's actually, I think it's right about close to the prequel hate. I mean, it is really getting up there. The posts that I have seen.
The weird thing is, it sounds like the people that are hating on it either A, didn't see it, like they just, they're mad at that it exists. Or B, it's like the complaints they have are kind of like misplaced. Like they're mad that Darth Maul was in it. Like, why are you mad Darth Maul's in it? Like, that's an awesome cameo. And people are like, oh, it makes the world small. Like, what are you talking about?
Well,
like, it's so funny. People that don't watch Clone Wars, I'm not holding it against you that you don't watch Clone Wars. That's fine. If you didn't watch it, whatever. But Darth Maul was brought back before George Lucas even sold Star Wars to Disney. Like, do you know how long ago that was at this point? It was 2013, I think.
Now, it's one of those things that for example, I listened to the Kind of Funny Reacts did one for Solo, and
I didn't watch it.
Now, to be honest, Nick Scarpino, if you don't know, he did have a lot, you know, he didn't like The Last Jedi. He did have a lot of valid complaints. Like, I can't dispute the complaints that he had. He was definitely higher on it than he was The Last Jedi, but he was basically saying, like, the main things that he didn't care for was he said that he could see why this movie kind of went through not development hell, but why it had some issues in production. And I can, in some instances, see what he's talking about. Some things do. I can't point them out off the top of my head right now, but I could see how he sees that.
See, that's interesting to me that you say that, because I thought that the movie actually seemed kind of seamless. So, I mean, yeah, like the L3 using her crotch to plug into the stuff, like that stuff kind of felt Lord and Miller-ish to me. But everything else, I thought it was actually pretty seamless. I couldn't really pick out like full sequences that were like, oh, clearly that wasn't Ron Howard, you know?
Well, basically, what I guess let me clarify a little bit more. What I'm getting at is, even from stuff like that, people who enjoy Star Wars and like Star Wars movies, I agree with what you're saying. That it feels like the people who are giving it this much hate didn't see it. Because even the people who like Star Wars and saw this movie, they have some valid complaints. but they're not nearly as bad as the hate.
They'll be like, yeah, it was okay. Or they'll say, like, it was fun, but I didn't love it. That's mostly what I get from the actual people that know Star Wars, you know?
Yeah. But then you have people who are like, oh, this is a cash grab. Like this is just, like, don't support
Lucasfilm. Those are the people that hate Last Jedi.
Yeah.
But from what I've seen, and I mean, obviously I can't prove it, but it seems like the people that are saying, oh, it's a cash grab, it's garbage, how could they do this, how could they ruin Han Solo, it seems like those are just the people that hated Last Jedi, and they just want to hate on this one, too.
Yeah. But I don't agree with the hate that this is getting at all. Of course, me and you both, like, I don't want to call us prequel apologists, but we both do enjoy the prequels.
Yeah, I mean, I don't have any shame in saying I like the prequels.
Yeah, I don't either.
I admit that the prequels are very, very flawed movies. Like, there's a lot of crap wrong with the prequels. I'm not going to deny that. But I love them for what they are. I'm not holding them up as high cinema comparing it to The Godfather. I know, you know what I mean? Like, but I adore them. And it's funny, Jeff, who's a co-host on my other podcast, he was saying something about something with the prequels and saying how, like, I'm a prequel apologist, or I don't think he said exactly an apologist, but he said something about, like, how I defend the prequels. And I was like, dude, I give Nate, like, I complain about the prequels all the time to Nate. Like, I love those movies, but I absolutely do not think they're perfect in it by any means.
Well, I think Star Wars fans, I talked to you about this before, I think that me and you and a lot of other Star Wars fans like us just like Star Wars on a different level. Like, Star Wars, it's not a way of life, but it's something that's so ingrained to us that unless you come out with, like, a complete cash grab project, we're going to like it or enjoy it or love it either way.
Well, the thing with me, and I think this is how you feel about it as well, is I just take the movies as
what they are.
This is what it is. They're not going to change it. So instead of getting mad about it, let me try and understand or appreciate or kind of figure out, like, why they would do certain things. So, like, people that hate and go, I actually don't want to dwell on this too much anyways, because I want to talk more positive about it, but, like, the people that had the problems with, like, Luke and the Tala Siren milk and, like, that scene, and it's like, oh, it ruined my child. Like, give me a break.
Yeah, no.
Like, I didn't love that scene, but it happened. It's over with. Whatever.
So I have two questions for you that are kind of the last things that I have. One, with the big reveal, like we talked about at the very beginning, the big reveal that I, like you, am still speechless about, that they revealed Darth Maul is an integral part in this universe right now. Do you think that them doing that, showing that on a main Star Wars movie, live action Star Wars movie, two things. One, is there any chance that we're going to see a live action version of what they showed on Rebels in some capacity if they do an Obi-Wan movie?
No, I don't think so. I think that scene is that scene is that scene, and I don't think they're going to overwrite that scene.
But what do you think they're planning? Why would they put Darth Maul?
Well, this is about 11 years before A New Hope, so Darth Maul was he's the leader of the Crimson. Crimson Dawn?
Crimson Dawn.
Is it Crimson Dawn?
Yeah, it's
I feel like that sounds similar to something else. There's like Crimson something in another something in another universe, but I think it might be like a Mass Effect thing. It was like the Crimson, I don't know, but he's the head of the Crimson Dawn.
Yeah, Crimson Dawn.
He had something to do with the Pike Syndicate, didn't he? Like, he was trying to take them over or trying to take them out or something in
Clone
Wars.
They were neutral with each other. Like, that was the issue that
As long as they didn't cross each other, they would leave each other alone, some of that. So, but I'm saying in Clone Wars, he was going to try and take them over or something. He had something to do with the Pikes. Like, they were name-dropped in the Clone Wars. But I think there's two routes they can... If they're going to do anything more with Maul, if this wasn't just a glorified, like, Thanos from Guardians of the Galaxy kind of cameo, if it's more than that, I think it's A, setting up for a Boba Fett movie.
Okay.
Or B, yes, it's setting up for a Obi-Wan movie that takes place 10 years before A New Hope.
Okay. Because I would think that they wouldn't just throw that in there. Oh, hey, let's randomly throw Darth Maul in there. Like, that cameo seemed to be very well thought out.
Yeah, I think that it's setting up... I personally think it's setting up for the Boba Fett movie, and I think that Boba Fett is going to be working for someone that's either against Maul or he's working for Maul, and Maul will be in it to the extent that, like I said, that Thanos was in Guardians of the Galaxy, where, like, he's just the guy that's telling Ronan what to do, but he doesn't really do anything.
Yeah.
Like kind of like the Emperor in Empire, you know, like where he's kind of there. He's a hologram, but he doesn't really do anything. He just tells Vader what to do. I could see him in it to that extent. I don't know how much more they would go into it, you know, but I definitely think they wouldn't put him in there. Just to go nowhere with it, you know.
Yeah.
I was going to say maybe the Favreau series, but that's post Return of the Jedi. So it wouldn't be that.
If that's what they're doing, if that's like an idea they have for Boba Fett, then the more stuff that's coming out about this Boba Fett movie makes me more excited, because I wasn't excited about them doing this at all. Like I told you, until they rumored that James Mangold would direct it, and then the immediate thought of a Boba Fett movie in a style that could be similar to like Logan, I fell in love.
And just a shout out. They need to get Daniel Logan in the Boba Fett movie directed by the guy that directed Logan. That'd be so, like, such a cheesy little, like, dad joke
Logan
that I can make.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, I see what you mean, yeah.
Like, Daniel Logan was young Boba Fett in Attack of the Clones. You know, so I think it'd be cool. Have you seen Daniel Logan on, like, Twitter or Facebook or anything?
He's
really into it, man. He's, like, working at, like, doing, like, workouts with Ray Park and stuff. Like, he's into it. So it seems like he would want
to
do it. It's just a matter of Disney not being scared of the prequels and bringing him back. You know what I mean?
Yeah. He's been in the con syndicate, like, recently. Like,
a real lot, yeah. And like I said, him and Ray Park have been working out, doing, like, crazy CrossFit, like, training and stuff. So it would be totally awesome to see Daniel Logan as Boba Fett. And so, Tim Morrison maybe, like, as you can have him come back as, like, Django had left Boba like a some kind of voicemail, like, you know how like in Captain America Civil War how Zemo had like the voicemail from his wife talking to him, and it was totally unrelated to the story, but it's like the last thing he had of her. I could see like Django leaving, like, it's like the last like recorded message Django had, and like, so you could bring Tamara Morrison back in that sense of like, oh, like you hear like old Django, you hear like Django, but it's, you know, so that'd be cool.
Yeah.
We're obviously like way speculating on a movie that's not even confirmed yet, but that, I think that would be cool.
So my second thing for you is I definitely feel like doing our general research, but primarily reading and listening to Last Shot, which is, I think, what they wanted you to do. Or else they wouldn't have released it so close to Solo. Do you think that going forward with stuff like this, that you are going to be more inclined to either read the comic, listen to the book, something like that, before you see a movie like this? Because I feel like Last Shot helped a lot, and I'm actually more excited to go back and re-listen to it in the context of Solo.
I'm excited to go back and listen to it to learn, to kind of pay attention more to L3 and Lando, actually.
Yeah,
I'm actually more excited to dig deeper into the Lando and L3 stuff from Last Shot, more so than, I mean, the past Han stuff was kind of, honestly, it was just kind of filler. Honestly, yeah. I don't even think it was needed. I think you could have just had the past Lando and then the present Lando and Han. I think it depends on the circumstance as far as whether or not I'd be more inclined to read like tie-in material, because I don't read any of the Marvel tie-in stuff before a Marvel movie.
Oh, I don't either.
There's just too much of it, and 99 out of 100 times it doesn't even matter. So Last Shot, story-wise, it didn't really tie in at all with Solo,
but with character,
but it gave,
like,
you the back, it gave you the backstory on L3 and Lando. I thought for a second in Solo that Emphas Nest was gonna be Sana Staros. I was like, oh, did they do that? And then it wasn't her. But I thought that would have been cool. It's kind of a wasted opportunity, honestly. But Sana is around later, so I guess I guess it wouldn't make sense to have been her.
So, random question. Going back to Emphas Nest, when she took the helmet off, my first reaction was, "Oh, is that going to be Beckett and Val's kid?" Because
that ran through my head. Yep, absolutely.
But then he had no motivation of I don't know who you are. Like,
and why
no...
would she be shooting at Beckett and Val, like in the train sequence?
Which I think I glanced over it. That train high sequence was awesome.
I thought it was awesome too.
That was so, so cool. I'm really disappointed with the lack of different stormtroopers that we saw. I was excited with the promotional material and the toys.
Yeah, there was the Mimban stormtroopers, which you only really you only really focused on, like, the ones played by, like, Rio and Beckett. Yeah. Didn't even really have a Stormtrooper outfit on. He had, like, the chest armor, but obviously he had his helmet off. But, yeah, and then on Corellia, they were just, like, normal Stormtroopers. Yeah, and then you had the Mud Troopers, like, the Mud Troopers on Mimban, I guess.
The only different one you had was the ones that were using the grav boots on the train.
Right, but you know what, though? Now that I think about it, the Empire really was just there because they were part of the universe at that time period. They weren't really part of the story.
Yeah.
Like, especially, like, that Star Destroyer scene in the space tunnel when they were leaving Kessel was a lot shorter than I expected. I thought that was going to be a big, huge, like, sequence where, like, Han and Lando go against the Empire, and it didn't really last that long.
Yeah. That was funny. It was like, oh, I know these guys. They're not going to waste TIE fighters. And I was like, well, I was wrong.
I don't think they used the other line that I like from the trailer either, where Han is like,
we're going to be fine.
Yeah, he's like, I was worried about that for a minute, but it's fine. We're fine. And they didn't use it. But I thought that line from the trailer reminded me of that, you know, the sequence when they're when he blows up the console in A New Hope when they're in the detention block. It's like, everything's fine. It's fine. How are you? Like, it reminded me of that. And so I'm kind of bummed that didn't make it in the movie.
Something,
at least not that I remember.
Something. A lot of complaints I've seen is that they didn't think the comedy hit. And for the most part, everything hit for me. But one of the lines that I love in that movie is whenever it was right before... It was when Kira was sitting in the cockpit, and he was like, well, it's kind of hard to do this. And Chewie goes, and he was like, when did you know how to fly? He's like, 190 years old? You look good. Like, that line, like, I love that line.
Yeah, it fell a little flat for me, but I think it might have just been because it was in the trailer. It was okay. I didn't have a problem with it. But, yeah, it was kind of like, it was like a kind of thing, like a quick chuckle. I did love when Chewie kind of just kicked Kira out of the seat and just took over. Yeah. That was awesome.
And then how they had that music cue where it was like, like, it had that, like, prominent, oh,
like
the
Rebel fanfare. Yeah.
I
do love, the thing that I really enjoy about this movie is the little moments. Like, the little things. Like, when Lando and L3 first jump into hyperspace, and it's the first time Han Solo ever goes into hyperspace, and you just see his face is, like, he's so, like, excited, and, like, oh, my God, you can tell that's when he fell in love with the Falcon, and that's when he fell in love with you know, being a pilot. Yeah. And I thought that was great. I loved the scene at the end when Han has the Sabacc hand, and it is Sabacc. We're finally clear on that, and we're also clear that it is Han, not Han. Love that little line too.
That was great, Han,
and he's like, it's Han, but it's fine. I love that little quirk.
Lando's being cheeky throughout their entire relationship. I'm gonna call you Han. You know, it's
yeah. But I love when he has the hand and he shows it to Chewie, and Chewie just goes, oh God. But I thought that was like, how do you not laugh at that?
Yeah.
I do find it weird though. Did you find it weird the Wookiee, like the other Wookiee that was on Kessel, it looked like a Planet of the Apes character?
It was
a little weird looking, right? It had like a shaved face. It was kind of weird.
Yeah, it was weird looking. I really did like that scene though, because it reminded me of because it was the most recent thing I've seen, the first episode of Rebels, when, like, I liked the whole, oh, Chewie's has this conflict. There's Wookiees that I need to save because I need to save my people.
And I see that episode. I'm glad you brought that up. Spark of the Rebellion. Spark of Rebellion, I think it's called. I thought how that happens in Spark of Rebellion is how it was going to happen with him saving Chewie.
Mm-hmm.
But it actually ended up being Chewie saving other Wookiees, which is fine. That's okay. I was just wrong on that prediction.
Yeah. But, overall, it's a movie. I think if it comes to my small theater, while I'm still in the town that I'm at right now, I may go see it for cheap just to be like, hey, I'm gonna go check this out.
Yeah, I'm just really broke, or I would have seen it again.
Yeah, if not, I'm cool with waiting till it comes out. But I would like to watch it again. A lot of people have said that this is a Star Wars movie that I don't feel like I need to see again.
Oh, I'm so excited to get this on home video.
I'm excited to watch the behind the scenes. Like, I'm really excited for the behind the scenes on this.
And you know Ron Howard probably, like, did a lot of behind-the-scenes stuff. Because, I mean, he was all over Twitter with behind-the-scenes, like, images and cryptic messages and stuff. And, like, when he tweeted out, like, the picture of the case of Coaxium on Kessel, and he says, spicy. Like, So I'm hoping there's a lot of cool behind-the-scenes stuff. But we didn't really get a lot of behind-the-scenes stuff with Rogue One, did we?
honestly, I watched Rogue One a couple weeks ago, and I forgot to go back and watch the behind the scenes.
I think we got that much stuff because of the production issues, you know?
I think there was only one disc. Because I know Last Jedi and Force Awakens both have...
They had the bonus disc.
Bonus disc. So I think that there may be
I think you're right. I think it was only one Blu-ray.
Because I remember my case being a Blu-ray and a DVD. I don't remember it being two.
I think you're right. Actually, we'll fact check and get back to you next week on that, but I'm pretty sure.
I actually have it right next to me here. You talk and I'll go over right. Real quick.
Okay, I am wrong. There is a bonus disc and the main Blu-ray.
Oh, so I was wrong as well. So there's no DVD with it?
No, there is. It's DVD. There's three discs in here, but the DVD's on the other side.
Gotcha.
So...
But yeah, overall, it's definitely a movie I would rate. If you love Star Wars, of course you're going to love this. You may have
some complaints.
It's just
a fun movie. I can see myself watching this movie a lot once I have it on Blu-ray. Like, just putting it on and not even paying attention to it.
Exactly.
Like, that type of thing. I could totally see that. Because it's not as heavy. Like, Rogue One, I would do that with Rogue One, but I feel like there is some heavy moments in Rogue One. And I feel like you can't really just put it on. Like, you put it on, then you end up getting sucked into it, and then you end up not doing the other stuff you wanted to do. And I'm talking from the sense of if I'm putting a movie on... with the intent of doing other stuff while it's on. I'm not talking about, like, if I'm putting it on to specifically watch it.
Yeah, this is definitely the perfect, and this is kind of a downside, but, I mean, it's a nitpicky downside, that Solo is definitely probably one of the best, like, just put on Star Wars movies. Now, you have said before that, like, you love you'll put on Revenge of the Sith and just do whatever. I tried to do that the other day. It was on...
Attack of the Clones is actually the one I do that with.
Oh, okay. Well, it was on TNT the other day. And it was on the part right after, I think I sent you a picture of it. It was the part right after Anakin had killed the younglings. And he was visiting Padme to tell her that he had to go to Mustafar. And I'm sitting here, I was like, I'm going to pop this on. I'm just going to play my Switch. And I pull up my Switch. I had it on. I had it about to click on a game. And I couldn't stop watching the TV. And I'm like, this is not a movie that I can just put on and not pay attention to because I'm going to want to watch it. And then sure enough, I watched it all the way up until the Obi-Wan and Anakin scene, and I was like, I kind of want to rewatch this from the beginning again.
I do that a lot. Sometimes I'll put on like Phantom Menace or like Attack of the Clones like super late at night, like it's like 12 o'clock and I know I'm gonna fall asleep in like a half hour, but I'll just put it on.
Yeah.
And sometimes I'll get to like Phantom Menace, I'll get to like right where they're leaving Naboo. Mm-hmm. Or like Attack of the Clones, I'll get right to like after they catch Zam Wissell. And I'll be like, I want to watch this in full tomorrow, but I need to go to sleep right now.
Yeah. But
so let's get back to Solo real quick before we close the episode, because we are running a little long. We both agree. If you are a fan of Star Wars and you're not one of those overly critical Star Wars fans, go see this movie. It's a fun time. Alden Ehrenreich, I think, did a very good job. I wouldn't say he did, like, a perfect job, because no one's ever going to perfectly pick up the mantle from someone like Harrison Ford. You know, you're not doing it. But I think he did a very, very good job. I bought that he was Han pretty much from the beginning. Yeah. Like I said, the Lady Proxima scene is really where I was like, all right, this is Han Solo.
Yeah.
Kira, I think some of her scenes might have either got cut or not filmed.
I think that's the character fault. I don't think that's the actress.
I think Emilia Clarke did good with what she had. Yeah. I just feel like I wish I either saw her angrier at Han for leaving, or I wish she had gotten more kind of time to tell, like, hey, Han, I've done some bad stuff. Like, more, like, she said that, but I wish that she actually told him, like, listen, like, even if it was, like, an extra minute or even, like, an extra 30 seconds, I'm like, listen, I've had to kill people, or I've had to, like, do things that you couldn't, like, unspeakable deeds that you couldn't imagine. Something that made it seem like she really did some bad stuff, versus her just saying, you don't know what I've had to do to stay alive. Yeah. Beckett was okay. Like I said, I wish Val got more time, and I think Val being around longer would have helped Beckett, but I did like that he wasn't overly, like, mentor-ish to Han.
But you could see that he took some of his...
Yeah, everyone thought Beckett was going to be like Han's mentor. He just kind of was the guy that Han was rolling with for, you know, until he took over. Lando, again, I loved Lando. I love Donald Glover as Lando. You think he was a little overhyped? I think he was...
I don't think he stole the show. I actually preferred Alden's performance for the most
part.
See,
I just want to say I like them together, you know?
Yeah.
That I don't know if I necessarily would like Lando without Han the same way that Lando was needed for Han in this movie.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
I guess the best way I could put it is, I don't think Lando was my favorite Donald Glover performance. Especially having just recently seen Spider-Man Homecoming again, and I really loved that short scene he had in Homecoming.
Yeah, I would have to disagree with you on that. I thought he was great as Lando.
I mean, I thought he was great as Lando too, but like, I just, I've watched.
I wouldn't choose that one scene in Homecoming over his performance as Lando.
I know, but I've watched a lot of Donald Glover, and this is one of those that like I really enjoyed. But I think for me, it fell victim to, oh my God, he needs a movie. I'm like, well, I mean, yeah, he was good, but I don't see why just him he would need his own movie. You know.
I guess. What I love about Solo is that it's going to get people to go watch Clone Wars. Like, wait a minute. How is Maul back? And then someone like me will be like, go watch season 4 of Clone Wars. Like, my best friend Jesse, he's like, how? How is he back? He got cut in half. And I was like, go watch this arc from Clone Wars. So hopefully it gets more people to watch that. Because Clone Wars is amazing. But we're going to wrap the show up here. We're going to talk about Solo a lot more next week. You know, we'll dig deeper. We'll actually pick some specific topics to talk about for Solo next week.
We'll finally stop talking about Last Jedi and The Force Awakens for 6 episodes.
I mean, up until now, it was the newest Star Wars to talk about, other than Rogue One, obviously. But yeah, we'll dig into Solo, and then maybe I want to finish or catch up at least the Darth Vader comic run that I'm reading. So I'll talk a little bit about that next week.
I think if it's on Comixology Unlimited, I will definitely check it out.
I think the one I'm reading is the one that's not on Comixology, but we'll figure it out. We'll figure that out there. Thank you for bearing with us. I know that Nate and I both had to take some quick breaks each, but we hope you enjoyed Solo as much as we did. We hope that you enjoyed our discussion on it. And again, we'll be back next week to talk about it. And oh my God, Maul is back. It's Ray Park. It's Sam Witwer. Let's get excited. You're a bold one, Obi-Wan Kenobi.
So uncivilized.